Tuesday, May 14th, what a day. As we advance further into May, I feel more and more like a pitcher that is poured completely full of some precious liquid, but it cannot hold anymore, and it simply overflows at the top. What a series of emotions, events, wonderful things that I would like to participate in vigorously, remember fully in detail. These last 6 weeks have been about the busiest in my life, and I am simply at the point where I yearn for a few days of nothing. I left a call for 6:30 and was dressed and ready and headed for the hangar at 7:15. I ran into Peter Rostow, who paid me one of the nicest compliments I shall ever get. He said, "Thank you, Mrs. Johnson, for the best weekend I've ever had. I like to get to know the children of my friends." And I've indeed come to consider Walt and Elspeth as our friends. This has been a special weekend with them, and all the more precious for me because Peter has obviously liked ranch life, from cleaning stables to driving an ancient Jeep. He flew into Bergstrom and got on Air Force One. Bergs were already on it. I'd explained my plan to Lyndon much earlier, and he said by all means we must invite them to stay at the White House. They wouldn't be in anybody's way, as he expressed it. So we'll arrange sightseeing for them much of the day. Then she'll watch Mr. Pear do my hair, and hopefully I'll look better in the years to come at the ranch with her help. One little segment of my mind is planning ahead these days, trying to fill every day with those things that cannot come again, those kindnesses to people who have been kind to me all my life by sharing the White House with them, and then simply getting ready for the day when I move out. But my energy, my sheer strength, simply does not match all the things to be done. And so, on the 3 hours back to Washington, I lay down in the cabin and tried to take a nap and couldn't. And so, literally, did that thing I hate most, wasted time. We went from Andrews into the White House on the helicopter, the Bergs very wide-eyed and excited, I think. Back in my room, I looked at the headlines of the paper. Here in Washington, the city of the poor was getting its first dwellers. And in Paris, Cy Vance and Avril Harriman were getting down to business with the North Vietnamese. And Bird came in and talked to me. Mother's Day had come and gone, and we hadn't made our announcement about her baby in late October. She said she was ready, and her daddy had already said, "The sooner the better." We left it tentatively that she would tell Liz, and Liz would take it from there. And then, with noon already upon us, Bess came in to plan the scenario on our dinner for tonight. Never before have we cut it so close. I looked over the guest list and got Marilyn busy, calling the James Langs and the Bell Hobbies to see if they would be house guests. Lyndon had already asked Jean Murray Vanderbilt. And alas, the Arthur Krims, with whom I'd spent the whole weekend, had been on the list, and I hadn't had the wit to check with them to see if they would be coming and to invite them to stay at the White House. I hope by now they know there's always room for them. Marilyn undertook to retrieve them from New York, and Bess and I went to work on seating and just how we would handle it. With 57, it was obviously too big for the upstairs family dining room and the intimate private approach that we had first planned. And yet, that many is lost in the state dining room, I think. Like a political meeting, a party is often better in a crowded room. So we decided on drinks ahead of time in the state dining room, and then round tables in the blue room for dinner, the strolling strings during dessert. They are always, for me, the moment of lift, of excitement, the White House touch. And then after dinner, coffee and liqueurs in the parlors, and little tables in the hallway, the small group for dancing for anyone who wanted to. Because it was not a state dinner, we did not have any entertainment planned. And because Mrs. Marcos is here for medical treatment, and the mood of the country is dead serious with the war, and our own strength so tested with the long hours of work, a really gala dance didn't seem the right format. I worked with Bess on the other lists, Costa Rica, Australia. We are running a race with that date book and daily losing ground. In June, I shall do nothing but harvest wildflower seed. But we did make progress. We kept right on working over a hamburger and Waldorf salad on a tray in my bedroom. Bess didn't walk out until about 3:30. I went to the swimming pool and had 30 laps. And Mr. Pear came in and gave me a shampoo and set, with Mrs. Berg watching. And I shut my eyes under the dryer and tried to think back to my visit to the Philippines. The archaeological dig with the Zobels, the picnic lunch at their beach house, the visit to the Loxins, and seeing their collection of artifacts, porcelains of the Chinese trade from the Ming, Tang, and Song dynasties, the fabulous, never-to-be-forgotten burial fiesta. And I studied the guest list, a bright, engaging collection of friends. Sometime during the afternoon, I don't remember quite when, Linda had come in to visit me and, very disturbed, had read me a letter from Chuck. All this time, I have been waiting for the just right time to write Chuck myself, when I could think quietly and express myself best and in my own handwriting. The perfect time never comes, so I stopped right then and there and dictated a letter to Ashton. That's one of my husband's marvelous attributes. He grabs time by the forelock and holds it at bay while he does some job with the other hand that never would get done if he waited for the perfect time. He's written Chuck and Pat about 2 letters a week ever since they left, and this is my first, I'm ashamed to say. Lyndon wasn't ready at 8 o'clock, and so I went out on the north portico wearing my pink chiffon with the white flowers. Mrs. Marcos arrived looking beautiful and quite well, with Angie Duke and her brother Ben, who is now the governor of one of the states, and 2 of her lovely blue ladies, and the charge d'affaires of the Philippines, in the absence of the ambassador. Actually, I didn't mind a bit that Lyndon was late, because this gave me an opportunity to really talk to her about the Zobels, the Loxins, our wonderful visit. What a great job of organization she did, taking care of 6 visiting chiefs of state. It had been a fantastically wonderful visit, and I wanted to let her know that it was well remembered and appreciated, every detail of it. And then Lyndon came in, and the 3 of us stood in line in the red room. Justice and Mrs. Thurgood Marshall led the guests in. She is a Filipino. C.R. Smith was the only cabinet member present. Handsome Danny Brewster and his new wife, the only senator, were Hale and Lindy Boggs, and the young Bill Moorheads, and the Ed Martins from the House. We'd asked the Chip Bolins, the new Deputy Undersecretary of State, whom I had not gotten to know well yet. And there was the former ambassador to the Philippines, Bill Blair, and his lovely Dita, and Menin Williams, who's the ambassador designate to the Philippines, and Nancy, and the Roger Stevens, because of Mrs. Marcos' interest in the Center for the Performing Arts. She told us the money had all been collected and the building would be completed in 6 months. And because she's beautiful and young and interested in arts, we'd invited several from the entertainment world, Dick Adler, David Merrick, the Robert Merrills, and from the press, the Dick Dickersons and Betty Beale. This party really ran to single ladies and single gentlemen. Fred Farr, Lloyd Hand without Anne, Jean Vanderbilt, Nancy White, editor of Harper's Bazaar, one of those stunning women present, in a very ladylike patrician black and white dress, and Lyndon's all-time favorite lady alone, Mrs. Nicholas Longworth. I put her at his table. He was full of congratulations about Linda and said, "I like her, I like her." There's a certain kinship between them, I think. Knowing Alice Roosevelt Longworth has been one of the exciting pages of my life here. A winter's tale to be retold when I sit by the fire and life is quiet. From Texas, there were the Bill Hobbies and the James Langs, both of them looking very chic and interesting, and I'd like to get to know them better. And we'd invited Adele Simpson and her husband, both because I like them and because Mrs. Marcos likes fashion. Mary Margaret and Jack were guests, and Bess, without Tyler, though. It was, in fact, an exceptionally attractive guest list, and I was proud of it as they filed past. In fact, it had all the makings of a good party, except a lively host and hostess. Lyndon looked very tired. He has not been sleeping well the last several nights, and he is always the most important ingredient in any party that we have. I had Ben Romaldes on my right, affable and easy, and then Lindy Boggs, who always carries the table, and on my left, Dick Helms, whom I found most compatible, handsome, quiet, very flattering in remembering little things about something you said or did sometime which you yourself have forgotten. He looks a far cry from the head of a cloak and dagger organization like the CIA. Mrs. Marcus had told us earlier that all the results had come out fine and that she was indeed quite well, nothing to worry about, but her husband had his foot in a cast. The park we had christened in front of Malacañang Palace has been extended and developed. She showed me pictures of it. She was a charming, easy guest, and after Lyndon's toast, she herself rose and made the return. Poised, articulate, with just enough of that air of feminine hesitation that kept you pulling for her. And so, it had been a good party, up to a point, but it rather fell apart when we left the dinner tables and had our coffee. A few people danced, but we made no effort to rev it up. We had already told Angie that an early evening would be a good idea. And so, when Mrs. Marcos made a gesture to leave about 11 o'clock, we went to the door with her, and guests drifted away rather quickly, and I was actually upstairs by 11:15, one of the earliest dinners I can remember. Leaving me vaguely dissatisfied that I hadn't summoned from some well of reserve enough sparkle, vitality, to keep things going and send people home feeling really excited that they had been to a great White House party.